Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today's date is Thursday, August 7th, 2003. Today's session is entitled, What Does It Take to Be a Missionary? Presented by Anne Bassi. Let's listen in.
Need to cover. I can't speak. This is the third in a series that has featured our three guests who attended the Lutheran World Federation Assembly last week, Banjab, Tamara, and Krista. What we're doing in this session is a little bit different. We've had a lot to say in our other sessions. This time we want to kind of explore with audience participation, first of all, recognizing that who didn't go to choir practice, who's a former missionary. And then we have four questions that we want to ask, and our panel will just talk about the questions in context. So we will also learn about missionaries and evangelism in Tanzania, in Russia, and in Thailand. The four questions that we're going to explore are, what is a missionary? What does it mean to be a missionary in your context? What is the aim of mission? And what role do ELCA and other North American missionaries play today as many self-supporting churches take the lead in evangelism in the region? So first, let's introduce just ourselves really quickly, and then we'll give the audience their first task.
Okay, I'm Herbie Meyer. I'm a member of the Global Mission Board, ELCA, and I'm also a former missionary to India.
And I'm Anne Bassi, and I work for the ELCA Division for Global Mission.
I'm Banjab Kusavadi. I'm a pastor and teacher in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Thailand.
My name is Tamara Tatsenko. I'm from Russia, from St. Petersburg. I am a member of the Lutheran, of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Russia and other states. And I am a women's secretary in my church.
I'm Krista Raimondi. I'm from Tanzania, from the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Tanzania. I'm not working in the church. I'm working with another organization for social security services. But in church, I'm a member of the executive council of my diocese.
I'm Kelly Falstich, and I just completed a year of internship in Ethiopia.
So she's a seminarian.
I'm a seminarian from Chicago.
Yes. I think you're taking notes, right?
I am.
So what we want to do first of all is, if you have served in Global Mission ever, any kind of mission trip, even if it were, you know, 3 weeks somewhere or 10 years, please stand up and tell us who you are and where you have served. Yeah, the panel will do that later. Anybody?
Just stand up.
I'm Dorothy. I always say Dorothy Meyer Schneidley because I was Dorothy Meyer all my years of service. I served 21 years in India in the South Andhra Lutheran Church.
Okay.
My name is Helen Strand, and I was in Papua New Guinea for 4 years.
And I also served in Papua New Guinea. I met her there. And my name is May Narrison.
Thank you. Now, children of missionaries. We have one back there because he spoke the other day. Right?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't a missionary. My father was a missionary. And my oldest brother. In Madagascar. I left in 1941, as I said the other night, and I've been back three times, once on a research project and then once on a visit when my oldest brother was retiring. So I do know something about Madagascar, have continued an interest in it.
Interesting. Anyone else, the children or a child or a grandchild of a missionary? Okay. The four of you for identifying yourself, thank you so much. I know at Holden a lot of people really have had amazing experiences around the world, but yeah, they went to choir practice. They're lost. We want to start by having kind of a group discussion of the question, what is a missionary? And then we'll go through our panel, but you know, in our other sessions, we've just been basically telling you our stories, but we wanted to kind of start with the discussion this time. So Kelly will write down our responses. So who would like to go first, and how you would, you know, how would you define a missionary, and what does a missionary do in your group?
I think a missionary is someone who wants to share his faith with other people, and you know, we could have 20 different ways you might do that.
think that a missionary is somebody who has a special calling to do that.
To share.
To share.
Any other answers? Okay, let me get right into the panel discussion. and there will be opportunity for questions also. So we've heard who's on the panel, and Kelly is too, even though she's writing down questions. So we'll start with what is a missionary, and starting with Hermie. I'm not going to ask this because I work at the Division of the Global Mission, but I am not a missionary, so I'm going to let people with more direct experience answer this question. But we'll go around in a couple of minutes each, okay? Answering our question. Starting with Hermie and going this way, a couple of minutes each, answering to you what is a missionary.
Okay, I'm just going to give you a little bit of overview of what missionaries have been in the past, before our predecessor bodies that came into the ELCA. We think of missionaries at that time, both the LCA and the ALC that came in, were mostly full-time missionaries who were called by the boards to go out and work in various fields. And that has now changed as we came into the ELCA, working in the accompaniment, working with our churches, and some of our guests represent those churches around the world. And that has changed so that we now have missionaries who are full-time missionaries, but we also have many missionaries in different categories. Missionaries who are part-time volunteers, who go out for 1 or 2 years, or even for shorter terms. We now have young people going out on a global mission for one year time. And then we have those people who are serving as missionaries sponsored by the ELCA, who are the South to South program, which are missionaries from Madagascar serving in New Guinea or in Cameroon or in Bangladesh, many different countries which we call the South to South program. And then we can also consider missionaries who are people that have been trained here by the ELCA and are now working in various countries around the world. Those are also missionaries. So we have many different types of missionaries who are serving under the ELCA. And to me, that's, you know, we don't think of a missionary as we thought of them many years ago.
What is a missionary?
Well, I fully agree what all you said. And another thing that if we look at the Bible in Matthew, the last chapter, and very last verse, say that God called to preach, to baptize all people. In my situation, since 99% are not Christian less than 1% out of 63 million, then I think we still need the missionary who preach and teach our people about Christ. Of course, the missionary may have a different role, preach, teach, and do another kind of work, maybe through the physical need, spiritual need, or something like that.
I think that there are very many different understandings what the missionary is, what a missionary is. It's normally there are people who are living for some country in Asia or Africa to tell Indian people about Christus and to make these people Christian. But in my country, it's not so. In Russia, my country is a Christian country, but the problem is that the most people during the long time of communism, they forgotten Christianity. And for us, for Russian people, everybody who is working for the church or in the church is missionary to give the people example how you like according the rule of Christ, of Christ.
So everyone in the church.
Everyone, I think everybody who is working for the church, in the church, in the Sunday school, for women, for old people, in young clinical work in our church, all this are missionary in our understanding.
Krista.
We often identify even by this very nice because in the past you used to know missionaries were just coming country. They came a long time ago in Tanzania from the US, from Germany, from Denmark, from Sweden and from everywhere. There are so many who came as missionaries to bring Christianity in our country. So by then they started the churches and they were running them themselves. But now we are independent because we know what we are doing. We build our own churches, we have our own pastors, our missionaries, whatever, but we still need assistance for young people like consultants, medical practitioners, teachers, professors in the universities. So in Tanzania we have a university, a university, which have three branches. One is in Kilimanjaro, that's a medical university. Then we have a Divinity University in Okumira. We have another university in Iringa. That one takes theology, administration, law, and whatever. So we have some people, even from the ELCA, who are working there. So actually, it's just a response to our request that we need to be advisors, professors, and such people. So they do come in response to our request. It's just not like in the past. So maybe we need something like maybe funding and whatever. So we get that from the missionaries. Such assistance. So now we are also now as ELCT sending missionaries to other countries. We started the Lutheran Church in Malawi, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Congo and Rwanda, who are now trying to be independent. But these other countries, and even in Kenya, it's ELCT which started the Lutheran Church in Kenya. Now they are now independent. So, in my understanding, missionaries just work out and assist them.
Anybody here? Can you all hear? I feel like we're so much farther away than the ground thing. Can we move our chairs forward?
Yeah.
The last session was so nice and intimate, and I feel like there's good separation. So we can look at you more than at each other.
Can we continue? Missionary is a person in mission, and I think the ELCA identifies their department as global mission. So those are people who are going outside of the States. And so like I think Tamara addressed, that it's a person in mission and that you don't have to leave your hometown to be in mission and to be a missionary. And it's a title that I think over the years, and especially maybe for young people, has some negative connotation that goes with it. When we look at books like The Poisonwood Bible, if you've read that book, or you know, let's take your land and if you come to Christ, we'll give it back to you. Those models aren't the ideal. And so I think to be a person in mission, whether you're in Washington or Chicago or New Jersey, you're still a missionary.
God's missionary.
God's mission, yes.
We want to talk a little bit about what it means to be a missionary in our own context. The other night when we were planning this session, some really fascinating stories came up that I hope will be repeated here. We got into a very heated discussion about global mission and how it's practiced. And Tamara had a lot to say about evangelizing in Russia. Banjag was talking a bit about some of the government penalties that are possibly imposed for someone who becomes Christian in a Buddhist society. So let's talk a little bit, starting with Banjab, I think, about evangelism in your own context and how the ELCT does its own mission to people who are Buddhist. You're a new church and a minority church, a culture that's 99.9% not Christian. So maybe you can talk a little bit about evangelism as your pastor's practice. And I know we talked the other day about your dream of moving into Myanmar also. So tell us a little bit about your mission work in your country and nearby.
I have said Christian in Thailand is a minority group. For Lutheran churches, there is 2,500 members for the whole country. And the way we evangelize, we prepare the tracks and we go out and deliver to the people around the street, the park, the mall, or everywhere we can go. As far as we do not make any, we are delivered by peace, not by, force or something like that we can do. And we can invite people come to our church. That's the way we do our evangelization. We also do by, sometimes we show the film, show the band, or go from village to village, something like that. That's no problem. For example, when we go with our band, we will go to the village and inform the head of the village. We invite him to come and give an open word at this before the band will show like that. He is the one who will call the people to come for us. There's no problem for our situation. And another thing that we, as I have said yesterday with you, for evangelization through our worship. For example, one of our members passed away. He's very old, and he's converted to Christianity about 5 years with his daughter. And the rest of his children are not Christian. And then one daughter who is a Christian and another one, they fought over the dead body. A Christian would like to have a funeral at the church, and the rest would like to take the body to the temple. That is, don't know how to do. I just, oh God, it's your better, not me. But one thing that I talked to a Christian lady in our church, that would you like your dead body of your father speak or give a witness for Jesus? And she said, oh, can he speak? Because he already dead. I said, yes, he can. If you allow your brother and sister took his body to the temple. And she agreed. And her went to see the abbot of the temple and explained the situation. And I asked for the permission for 3 days to hear the funeral in a Christian way for 3 nights at the temple. That's the first time for me to preach in Thai temple, Buddhist temple, by the permission from the monks. Before we start, I invite the monk to come, the abbot to come, and some of them did come. And after we finished our worship, there's one lady come up and said that she would like to be a Christian. But she observed and she heard the message of Christ. That's amazing. That's one way that we can evangelize. For our people, by liturgy, through the funeral or something like that, by our worship.
Didn't you tell me that now you and the monks are kind of good friends now, right? You have a good dialogue between the two of them.
And another thing, even we are small church, but we also think of our neighboring country. Our church has already started to fund some money for an aim that we would like to send a missionary to Cambodia or Laos. This is in our in the process of doing the work. Please remember us in our prayer. Even 99% are still not in Jesus Christ, but we still look forward for our neighboring country. But actually, we have we call the radio program. We broadcast in Thai, but the Lao people can listen to our radio program. They sent a letter to us and asked for more information about Jesus. They even invite our pastor to visit them. And this happened. We sent our pastor to visit them. But by we didn't inform the government, they just said, my relative, the law said, my relative, I would like to invite him to come to visit us. That happened in this way. Remember us in your prayer too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tomorrow when we were talking the other night, you were talking about some of the rules that your church lives under when it comes to evangelizing.
I am a representative of the Lutheran Evangelical Lutheran Church in Russia, and my church in Russia is a minority church. The majority church is the Russian Orthodox Church. But my church has a good experience in mission before the time of the revolution, 1917. It was allowed for my church in 19th century to do mission in Russia, but only for indigenous people, for Muslims people, for animals religions people, not for Orthodox people. It was strongly, it was not allowed to do mission to this for Orthodox people. And all the Russian people, they were Orthodox, and for everybody Russian, it was not allowed to convert to Muslim. It was strongly not allowed. After the revolution, our church was closed and persecuted. And after the time of perestroika, it was allowed to be rebuilt for our church after the time of perestroika. And today, it wasn't allowed for us today to mission for the Orthodox people. It is forbidden today. We can do it only for people with Lutheran background, for people in Russia who have German, Finnish, Latvian, Swedish background. Not for Russian people. We can't stay on the street and invite to go to come to our church. It's not allowed. But our churches, our congregation, they are open for everybody. And if the people come, especially young people, they are welcome and they can became a member of our congregation.
Mm-hmm. So to talk a little more, to continue this little section here on evangelism and how our church is evangelized. Krista, I know when there's a lot of information about the African churches and how much they're growing, how quickly they grow, compared to North American Lutheran Church, how quickly the Ethiopian Church, the Tanzanian Church are growing. And I know that people talk a lot about pastors and evangelists. So there are different roles, right? And can you explain that? Tell them, not me. what those roles are, and what is the role of the evangelist in the African Church, sort of as a missionary to new believers? What, maybe you can explain that, because we don't have anybody that we really call an evangelist here. We have pastors and members, but I don't know any of us. I told you that this month in Luther Magazine, a big article is, "Do Lutherans Hate Evangelism?" So we don't have anybody that we really call evangelists. So if you can explain that system to us.
Maybe it has a different, you know, when we talk about the legalism, ELCT is a lower level of a pastor.
Yeah.
So there is a pastor, in each congregation we have a pastor and we have an evangelist. And we have a diaconist or a parish worker, we call them parish workers. So in the context of the LSD, an evangelist is somebody who is assisting the pastor in that congregation. But in another broader way, an evangelist is somebody who goes out to preach. We have several of them who go out to preach, not in other regions, in the suburb areas, in the rural areas. The parts where people do not have church, they have never even heard about the church, about Christianity, about Jesus. So what we do, we just collect money, we make donations, and through our offerings, we send people in rural areas to go and preach and tell people about the good news of Christ and whatever. So each is a congregation, it's done by a diocese, but in our diocese we have six divisions. So maybe each division might collect funds to send one or two, so they come in a group from the other diocese. But each division will send maybe two. You have to fund them for the fare to go to that area.
To a new area.
To a new area. Uh-huh. To preach the gospel. So they go there, they can spend a month or 2 weeks. They do that, and then they come back. And then it's our duty to make a follow-up and see how these people are going on. So that's the evangelism which we are doing in Tanzania. And I think it's even in Kenya they're doing the same. Yeah, because we know there are some people who don't have, there are no churches maybe there. There are no churches, and in rural areas, you know, in my country, there are still some areas where people have never heard about Christianity, about Jesus, or maybe they're just over. So we have to go to those areas. Our country is too big. There are some rural areas where people cannot get pastors. So we do that, and we are doing like in Dar es Salaam, we go to Zanzibar. You know, Zanzibar is a Muslim area. So what we have been doing is to contribute money, go there, send people to stay there, and build churches for people who are interested, who maybe will hear about our evangelism and then tying to Christianity. Of course, it is very difficult, you know, that area, because there are those people that are fundamentalists in the Muslim, but we do that. Mm-hmm. And some other areas, of course, you don't know my country, but there are areas where they have never heard the word of God. Mm-hmm. So we do that. We are just doing that.
And when you talked earlier about the ELCT founding churches in Rwanda, Kenya, Burundi,
Congo, DRC, DRC, Malawi, Zambia, and now we are going into Uganda, because in Uganda the Protestant church is there, the Anglican, otherwise it's the Roman Catholic and Anglican. So now we have sent people to open the Lutheran church.
And those are missionaries from the Evangelicals and Church of Tanzania.
I'd like to ask her a question. Yeah. How much training do these evangelists get? You have a special place where they're training?
Sure.
And are they usually men or usually women, or are they both?
They're both. We have colleges where these have been trained for 3 years.
And do you send them out alone, or do you send them out two by two, or? In India, we used to have Bible women that went out as evangelists, and we always sent them two by two. You know, we'd send a couple of people. But that, of course, might be more expensive, right? I was wondering if you send them just to the one person, or the family, or husband and wife, or...
No, it's just one person. Some are not yet married, and the who are married, they go in single. No, you don't send them.
But they have a special training. Not
they have a special training. It's 3 years, but 1 year is done in congregations to gain experience. So they stay there for 1 year, they come 1 year, we put them in our congregations, they practice, and then they go back for another 1 year. When they come back, it's when we post them.
Okay.
Do they get a special certificate then?
Yeah,
they're evangelists.
Sure. They get special certificates, and later they can go to
the pastor.
Yeah.
Kelly, there you were in Addis Ababa for nearly a year.
Yep.
And as an intern, you were considered by the ELCA a missionary because we have pastors who are missionaries and you were an intern pastor. Can you talk a little bit about what you saw of Global Mission in your context in Ethiopia?
In Ethiopia, there's four ELCA missionaries who are there, and two function as teachers. One is the dean of the seminary there, and he's the man. And then there's a woman who teaches missiology at the seminary. And there's another man who has been a Bible translator, and his wife who does things in the private schools. She's helped start a couple schools in Ethiopia. And that couple has actually been in Ethiopia for 43 years. So those are the missionaries that the ELCA has in Ethiopia. And similar to Tanzania, there's this model of evangelist and pastor in the Ethiopian churches. So the evangelists do go to school, and mostly they're connected with the congregation. So the evangelist goes out in the surrounding neighborhoods and does the outreach, I think is a word that we would often use in our context. The Ethiopian church has grown by leaps and bounds. They're either as big as or just as big as in Tanzania, about 3 million. And part of the success of the growth of the Ethiopian church is its foundation in the Ethiopian Orthodox Church, which has been in the country since the 4th century. So this Christianity thing, this message of Jesus, isn't so very new in many areas in that country. So the church is growing, and to be a missionary there has changed over the years. This couple that began in the 60s did a lot of outreach. They started congregations in the northern part of the country. And when I traveled with the man, he teaches the Afar, they're nomadic people, to read their language every year. When I traveled with him, he still had tracts in the local language in his glove compartment. So he was still kind of functioning out of the older model of outreach and evangelism, even as a foreigner. But it has since changed a little bit in Ethiopia so that they Hermie will touch on this in a little bit, but they accompany the church, the Makani Yesus Church, as it's called in Ethiopia. And my role, I was one of five seminary students that the ELCA sends out each year to different countries to do their internship with the congregation or with a refugee network, but to give some experience to younger people, younger pastors in the global context. So that's what I was doing there. I was preaching and teaching and visiting the members of an international congregation.
Do you want to talk a little more about your experience or a compliment?
A compliment is what the ELCA has been using since the formation of the ELCA, and that is accompanying our churches around the world. And I think probably the example of this accompaniment has been the companion synod relationship. How many of you are ELCA people who have a companion synod? Are you familiar with your companion synod? How many of you have visited your companion synod? But that is almost every synod has a companion relationship, and besides one companion, many of our synods have two companions and maybe three companions, so that increases the accompaniment, because I think the Northwest Washington Synod has with Russia and with Ethiopian, so that they will be able to have the Ethiopians relate to Russia and to the ELCA, so that this increases this whole accompaniment model, so that we are sending missionaries only on the request of Ethiopia if they want certain individuals, people to work in human rights, or people to work in as a nurse, or to work in the HIV/AIDS program, various, then we, with those people of expertise in that, will go to accompany the Ethiopian church. And this has meant a very much of a change in the type of missionary that is going. Probably sending evangelists to
Ethiopia and to Tanzania, which is the fastest growing churches, we are not sending people who are purely working in evangelism, but we are sending people who they are requesting to help, so that this companion type of relationship. And I was told at the last Division of Global Mission Board meeting that there are 18 churches that are asking for help and to be accompanied by the ELCA, so that we are presently working with 68 churches. Is that right? 68, I can just see it somewhere in that vicinity.
Well, we have missionaries in 43 countries, and then the number of churches, independent Lutheran churches that would be considered companions of the ELCA, is more than 60.
More than 60. And then you have more that are asking to be associated with the ELCA. Not all in missionaries, but in a different, to be related and to be able to maybe send people here for education, yeah, and so forth. So that if you take into consideration all of the people that are working, we have to consider those who have been trained in the U.S. and are now back working in their particular countries. I think David Lerseth has worked out a figure that there were 8, if you took that number of total missionaries, volunteers, full-time, and people who are working in the South to South program, and people who are been trained here in the U.S., you have over 850 people who are working as, and you would classify them as missionaries under the new, what we think of missionaries today.
If I can just clarify a little bit, and then let's have another audience participation question here. The biggest change in mission and how it was practiced many years and how it's practiced today, I think, is exemplified by this week of activities with the Lutheran World Federation that I think was in 1952, and how many Lutheran churches were present in 1952? The second,
probably about 26.
26. Everything else was a mission field. And today, all of these places that missionaries helped start in the 19th and 20th century are their own self-governing churches. So 136 self-governing Lutheran churches attended the Lutheran World Federation. That doesn't mean there's no need for missionaries at all, because people have, you were the one who said there were 108 different missionary agencies in Thailand right now. Clearly, people are still involved with global mission, but the way that people, the relationship between the churches is different, so that Tanzania is no longer a mission field for Lutherans. Instead, when the ELCT, like you said, you know, calls up the ELCA and says, hey, in fact, you can see, I brought some materials along. This is a four-page brochure that talks about openings that are currently available, long-term, short-term, and volunteer. And all of these positions would have, the request for these positions would have originated from a companion church. Not like the ELCA said, hey, here's a good idea. We're responding to requests from our companion churches in all those areas. And that's just kind of a shift in how, maybe when you were in Papua New Guinea, was the church independent yet? It was around 1970, I think.
No, the church was independent. Then they had their own bishop. Mm-hmm. The bishop was no longer a missionary.
Mm-hmm. So you were there when it was already an independent church. How many, you were there for 4 years?
Yes.
And what years were you there?
I was teaching at a Lutheran Teachers College.
Mm-hmm. What years?
Mm-hmm. 74 to 78.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes a lot of the missionaries who are there, who are out in the world today, are teachers, but you know, what's interesting about that is your story today in our earlier session about how you came to be a Christian because you're going to a Christian school. So teachers who are teachers from all countries, northern countries, southern countries, ELCA, are always able to witness in situations where, you know, where there might be government prescriptions. So I know that that's true today in Satya Wacana Christian University in Indonesia. There are some ELCA missionaries teaching there. And that's it's a Christian university, but about 40%, I think, of the students are Muslim. Mm-hmm. Likewise, in the schools in Palestine, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in Jerusalem schools are maybe, well, because there's so few Christians in Palestine. Do you know that number? Is it more than 50% of the kids, Diane, were Muslim in the ELCA?
I don't think it's quite that high, but they're open to anyone.
They're open to both Jewish children and Muslim children.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So teachers are very influential people in the lives of Christians around the world. Okay, what was my next question? Oh, shoot, we had a great question here that we talked about. Well, anybody else have any questions?
Well, I just wanted to add that when I went to India in 1950, we were already in the process of the National Church taking over, but it takes time. You know, I mean, it doesn't just happen. But my very first year there, the board secretary, Dr. Fricke, was there, and the whole process of how it was the Indian church was taking over, and then we had a 12-year plan, and there was a gradual shift of people going home, and the Indian management. And interesting enough, the men were the first to leave, you know, on the plan, but the women, we were the last, because I guess we had to be the most patient one, the long-suffering, because it's not easy to, this transition is very difficult to, because people, you know, they wanted the missionaries to be in charge in a way, so to relinquish that, and then, I mean, some wanted to take it over, but when you become self-governing and self, sufficient, I mean, finding the funds to do, you know, this whole, so it's a long process, this 12-year plan. So when I started in 1950, the process was beginning. I just wanted to share that with, you know, taking over. And so then we gradually, every year we had to say, we're only here, we're working our way out of a job, we're training people that are going to take over from us. From the day one that I went in 1950, we were planning that. And every year we told the government, I'm just here, you know, another year to have permission to stay because I'm training someone to do my job. So, you know, so this process began a long time ago.
I think that was the strength of Lutheran missionaries for many years, right? Because when the Lutherans were in Tanzania, the intention was never to stay there and run a church. But everyone, from the beginning, everyone was being trained, right? To become pastors, to run your own church. So that was always supporting. The goal was that the Tanzania church would be self-sufficient.
But this sometimes doesn't happen so quickly.
What were some of those other great stories we were talking about the other night? I'll just tell you things that I brought up. Again, we have a lot of lists of openings of what's available right now. I have a few copies of the International Personnel Directory, which is from the ELCA. You know, this is like any directory, it's out of date 5 minutes after it's out, but it will give you a general idea of who's serving where in what countries, a little description of the churches. Could you just show that? This is something called The Changing Role of the Missionary. Thank you, Kelly. I'll buy an E. The Changing Role of the Missionary outlines the shift in from mission field to self-governing church and what that means today, and particularly what it means for evangelists, for evangelizing, and this theology of accompaniment.
I think the young adults in global mission is something we should point out. That is something that has increased. I think we had 3 or 4 years ago, there were only about 4 or 5 that were involved, and most of it was in Great Britain. These are mostly college students who agree to spend a year in a country that has requested their help in a variety of things, working in a social service in London, working in say a farming issue, a farming place in Argentina, various places. And so that four, I think, is I've heard some number, around 20-some college students are interested in working as global mission advocates. And the ones that have come back, many of them have gone into full-time church service. So it's a rather new program and one that has increased in numbers. So if you know college students who want to spend a year in another country, this is a good opportunity.
Or up to 30.
Up to 30.
I think that was the last cutoff I saw.
Yeah.
So you're a young adult.
18 to 30.
Yeah, I think that has grown because the guy that does recruiting for Global Mission realized that, you know, for he was just having to tell young people just to go to the Peace Corps because what other churches are asking for are people with pretty sophisticated skills, you know, pastors who can teach seminary, who can teach missiology, or doctors and nurses, or teachers, people who would have had more professional experience than a young person would have. And it was sort of disappointing if you turned them away. So this new program is very intentional, giving young people a role, and they do go in groups. There's four countries.
Now.
Thailand, Germany, Egypt, Kenya, the UK, and Argentina.
So six.
And so there's several in each country, so they get a chance to get together and reflect on their experiences and really learn from them. Yes?
I was wondering, I was just thinking about that with the church sending youth over. What is the, is there any significant difference in the approach that you've been discussing here about you know, going there so that the church will become self-sufficient and say the Peace Corps and their philosophy in terms of going there and helping? Is my question not clear? In other words, the goal being to empower the community.
Yeah.
Is the objective through the Peace Corps the same as far as you know, or not?
Well, you know, a big difference is that there would be, our young adults would be working in a Christian context, so church and faith would play a bigger role. Right. Empowerment is always a point. I think, you know, when you think about United Kingdom, it's really more service. They're working at agencies that might deal with development with disabled adults. So it would be similar to somebody volunteering and working in an agency here. Everything is always for their benefit or to empower.
Well, what about Slovakia? Did that mention?
Well, no, Slovakia are volunteers.
Oh, volunteers. Okay.
If you want to teach, there are a lot of job openings in Slovakia, and Bratislava is supposed to be a very beautiful city.
When the
word volunteer is used for Global Mission, it does mean that you have to pay your way to get there, but in a place like Slovakia, there's housing, there's a stipend. DGM doesn't pay your ticket to go there, but when you get there, there's a stipend to live on, there's housing, in many of the situations that are called volunteer.
And there's usually 1 or 2 year terms over against volunteers that may be in shorter periods of time, like in healthcare, doctors in Tanzania or some of the others, maybe for a 3 month or a 6 month.
I remember my question. And you know, it's the title of this session. We called this session, What Does It Take to be a Missionary? So I wondered, especially for those of you who identified yourself as having served before, what Kelly, you just got back, and there you were. What kind of qualifications or character traits do you think that someone who's going to work across, all of us share God's mission and share Christ with others, but missionaries often do this cross-culturally. So what additional, you know, there you are sharing your faith in Hyde Park, Chicago, Illinois. What about Addis Ababa, Ethiopia? What additional strengths did you find that you needed there?
Gosh, I think skills of transition are always helpful in life. Transition is never easy, but be a 24-year-old woman in a brand new country and not knowing a language, transitioning was difficult. But also the ability to be open and to be patient. I think patience would be a big one. And maybe Dorothy, maybe you can echo that. But patience just with any new experience, learning a new culture, a new language, things are going to be different. And so patience for change, I think we're the two biggest there. People call me brave, and I don't think it was brave. My family calls me silly sometimes for going and doing it. But yeah.
Did you request this assignment or what?
No. When we go in for the international program, we say we're open to anywhere.
Okay.
And so I found out I was going somewhere, and a month later they told me where.
That's true for interns, but if you were applying for an ELCA position, they would maybe try to find a fit that was good for you. I don't think they'd be at the last minute telling you where you're going to go.
Right.
quite a long orientation process that you still go through. And for long-term positions, like some of the more recent, the long-term positions in Madagascar, people go to language training for a couple of years to learn French, and then they learn their basic when they're there. So for the long-term positions, there's quite an investment in preparation. Yes?
I think one of the best gifts that we found we had to have is a sense of humor, to be able to laugh at ourselves when we make some of these wonderful groups ups, and when we do things that are not the way we're supposed to, but be able to laugh at yourself and not take everything totally, you know, seriously. Devastatingly serious, you know, that you've just blown it.
Tell us again, you came in late, so give your names and where you served. Where were you serving?
We were in Liberia, Africa, from 1987 to 90,
okay.
Came out in the war.
And what were your jobs in Liberia?
I was a pastor for a 5-point parish, including 1 English and 4 Pali speaking, but I had evangelists do most of the work. I was just there. I was head of the K through 12 school, superintendent of K through 12 school, worked with the Liberian teachers and just kind of held that all together. And I taught at the seminary for 2 years, full time. I think that's all I did.
The bishop there, Bishop Diggs, was the one that assigned us our roles once we arrived there. So I was assigned to be the chaplain at Phoebe Hospital and to teach a class in Christian ethics for the school of nursing that was related to the hospital. And then the bishop also assigned me to a church or a parish that had 25 village preaching points in it. And I primarily then worked with each village had an evangelist and then at least one, what they called an ordained deacon who could administer sacraments. And fortunately, the second year we were there, our third year, we were able to have an intern from the seminary where we both taught. And so that helped a lot. So it was an enjoyable experience. Now eventually I taught about half time at the seminary also.
Mm-hmm. Yes. What did you need to be a teacher?
I go along with all these things that were said, but I would also say, you have to be willing to be accepting of the people. Uh-huh. It's so easy to go in and say, well, isn't it silly that they do this way?
That's right.
Why don't they do it this way, you know, like we Americans would? Mm-hmm. And so you have to go in and you want to know how they do things, but not putting them down. And the longer you're there, the more you see, oh, yes, I guess this is a good idea. This fits in with their culture. And so it's so important to accept them instead of criticizing and holding up us.
My supervisor called it the absence of shared logic. That in Ethiopia, there are no street signs, but there are plenty of people to ask, how do I get there? So why do you need street signs? Or there are no lifts, there are no elevators in many buildings. Well, why do you need lifts when there are able young men who can carry someone up 3 flights of stairs? So it's the absence of shared logic that it makes sense and it works. But to us, it might seem very strange.
One piece of advice that I was given when I first got there was to just to observe, to listen, and not, you know, open your mouth about anything till you've been there 1 year. Because you see and you understand then why people do the way they do it. And that was the best advice that I could have been given. And of course, you know, accepting people and being willing to go along, you know, just not thinking that you have all the answers. But I think having a farm background, I grew up not expecting, I didn't have a lot of entertainment. And so you learn to have your own entertainment, and you learn to, you know, to make do, and having a sense of humor and just, you know, enjoying it, enjoying the people. I went to language school, Christ. Right away, and of course I had to learn to get along with the British people first. I was the only American. No, I wasn't learning to get along. But, you know, the whole culture, the adjustment was, you know, in another place before I went to the field, because learning the language, we had to pass oral and written language examinations, you know, before we could be of any use to, you know, the field. So there was a long preparation, and I don't think that at that time we probably went through giving up tests later on, you know, psychologically, and then I don't know if I'd have passed if they'd given me all those tests. But, you know, many people couldn't take it, you know, because I don't think they were prepared for long time. I mean, when we went, that's going to be 5 years. You're never going to see your family or anybody.
And there was no email.
No email, no telephones. I mean, you write errors, you know, we lived without electricity in the first 5 years. But you know, we didn't expect, I think one of the nicest things that happened to me when I was going to the seminary, I met one of our missionaries who'd been out there for 12 years. She was on furlough. And I looked at her and I thought, well, she looks very well after 12 years. So I thought, that was a great comfort to me. Yeah. So, you know, being young and, you know, God prepares us in stages.
Well, someone did ask me yesterday, well, you have this young adults program. How about like the senior adults program? Mm-hmm. And just to let you know that most, especially in the volunteer positions, people who retire early,
you're a great resource to us. Many of the missionaries are actually older, 50s and 60s, and people who have finished their careers, or they're at a point where they, you know, kids are grown, or they didn't have any kids. Family's not a question anymore. Because for younger families, we heard your story of the boarding school, and there are still boarding schools that some children go to, and so when there's families involved, it's a quite a logistical situation to get everybody educated and cared for when their children are different ages. But many people in their 50s and 60s and even 70s volunteer or take long-term positions. Yes?
I think we should be thrilled that the Holy Spirit seems to be able to grow the church and bring Christ mm-hmm. to people, even though we're not sending out hundreds of missionaries.
Right.
I have relatives who say, well, we should be sending. And since we're not sending, that is place that guilt feeling upon me and others, and shame on us. Because their favorite song is Get Me That Old Time Religion. And they think that means get me that old time missionary situation. Well, whatever the reasons are for that, that's a separate question from the fact that churches have grown immensely after missionaries left.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the first indication of that was in Sumatra during the Second World War, when the German missionaries who had come there and been wonderful missionaries and struggled and whatnot, the war came, they were all put in concentration camps, and the church grew just like wildfire. And at the end of the war, we Lutherans looked at that, and we were simply gaga at what was happening. Well, then now China comes along, and for years, nothing was allowed. Stomped and stamped down and everything. And now we can't send any missionaries to China. But in St. Paul, Minnesota, the largest group of students outside of China at a university are at the University of Minnesota. And they have their families there and their children there. So we have a hospitality center for Chinese right at the Lutheran Campus Center across the street from the University of Minnesota. And the thing is thriving, and it's going very well. And the pitch that is made to people to support this and pray for it and hope for it is that we can't send missionaries to China, but we can bring Christ to these students who are at the University of Minnesota. There are a couple thousand of them. And while all our missionaries are out of China, the place has been growing like wildfire. And so this is the only answer I give to people who shame me for.
It happens a lot. So I just want to clarify, the ELCA does send missionaries. There are about 285 or 300 at any one time out there. But another thing to keep in mind is that a lot of the ELCA money that goes to the Division for Global Mission goes to direct grants to churches. So we're present and we're playing a very critical role in many churches, in many places where we don't have people, but we're funding a program, or we're funding a hospital, or we're funding a theological education center. So, you know, North American dollars continue to play a real critical role in helping churches grow. So our money sometimes goes where people don't go. But we can't just measure our activity in people only, because there are many other ways. Oh, the scholarship program, something like almost 500, since the creation of the ELCA, almost 500 people from countries around the world have gotten postgraduate. I was talking to another Tanzanian pastor last summer who gave me figures of how many Tanzanian bishops
have studied
here. Studied here. Or now we also, like for example, Banjab is a student in Australia, and you were explaining to me your church pays part of it, LWF pays part of it, and the Australian church pays part of it. So, you know, not everybody comes to us for Lutheran education. People are studying in higher education institutions around the world and getting additional postgraduate education so they can return and teach in seminaries or start seminaries. So let's hear about what it takes to be a missionary from you. The qualities of the person who is a missionary. When the ELCC sends people, what kind of qualities when your church sends missionaries to Rwanda? Well, of course, some of those missionaries are Rwanda, but what qualities are you looking for? Am I running out of time?
Oh, we could just talk forever about it.
Yeah. Where the time just goes. Well,
saying, somebody has to be flexible. Yeah. Because you know, one that is a French, speaking country. So maybe, I mean, most of our people don't know French.
Yeah.
In Tanzania, it's Kiswahili and English. We can speak English without any problem. So somebody going there has to be patient to start learning the language. But you know, wonder their language, we are people, just like people in Cuba, they can just understand a little bit of the language there. So somebody has to be flexible to go there. Some of the ways can be patient and mix with other people without any problem. And you know, in Rwanda, those when they, long time ago, this fighting didn't start now. It has not started now. It started a long time ago. So those people are coming to us, and we are using them in our farms and whatever. So when you go there, you don't have to see these people as if they are on the wrong standard. You have to go there as an evangelist and a lawyer. So you have to be patient and make yourself as if you are one of them.
One of them.
Yeah.
The medical one. That's a good point. Well, okay, currently 6:15. You're all welcome to dine with our guests tomorrow. Our LWF guests are leaving, so this is our last dinner together. No questions. Join. Thank you all for coming.